Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. Today, Julie Fudge-Smith and I are going to be talking about the tools of the trade, the stuff you need to have a dog. And there's not really that much stuff you need, but it does matter a little bit what you use. So let's just start with your basic collar. Everybody's dog wears a collar. So Julie, what are your thoughts on collars?
Well, my thoughts on collars is that I like flat buckle collars. Meaning, and I do like ones that have the quick release as opposed to an actual buckle. And the reason for that is because one time when I was in the dog park teaching a client how to manage the dog park, two other dogs were playing and suddenly I heard the owner screaming. And they said, help, help, help. And I ran over and one of the dogs had caught his jaw, his lower jaw, underneath the collar of the other dog and had twisted it. But because it wasn't a quick release, but a regular buckle, I pulled my keys out to try and flick the little metal part, and I couldn't get it. And when I realized what had happened, I actually picked up the dog whose jaw was underneath the collar, turned the dog around to untwist it, and then I was able to get it out. But that would not have been necessary if there had been a quick release. So I'm now a great fan of quick release collars, especially if your dog is playing with other dogs. But I like a flat buckle collar with a quick
release. What a terrifying story to start with.
Yeah. I realized it too. It's like, wow, had no intention of starting off with that one. But it makes my point that you need to be able to get the collar off quickly if your dog is playing with another dog. And so it was not so... Anyway, if your dog never has any interaction with any other dog, then fine, get a regular buckle collar. The other kind I like are, especially for dogs that have slippery heads, you know, thinner head dogs like greyhounds or even shepherds, are the martingale style. And everybody, that's hard to explain, so we're going to have to put a picture on the show notes. But it's basically a collar with an extra loop. And so it comes around, and the extra loop allows the collar, when it's just on the head of the dog or on the dog, it's very relaxed and the dog is not choking or anything else. But when you clip onto it, what it does is it moves so that the collar tightens up. It doesn't choke the dog, but it tightens up so it can't slip off the dog's head. And martingale collars are really good for slippery-headed dogs.
And unfortunately, they're called by a million different names. So they might be called no-slip collars. They might be called martingale. They might be called, you know, adjustable, expandable. It's difficult sometimes that you'll walk into a pet store and say, my trainer sent me looking for martingale collars. And the employees say, we don't have that. And they do. They just call it a different thing. So I always try to explain to my clients exactly what they're looking for.
Right.
And try
I usually
to
end up drawing a picture.
Words.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they're very common. They're everywhere, but they're called different things. There's also greyhound collars are a form of martingale collar.
Correct.
Which typically has a much wider strap. So the concepts are similar and the same. And other dogs can wear greyhound collars. If you totally love the beauty of a greyhound collar, go for it. You can put it on any dog you want. It's okay.
That's right. It's not licensed. It's not like, you know, there's greyhound licensing. And so unless you are a certified greyhound or greyhound mix and can prove that with a DNA test, you cannot wear our collar.
And your elegant neck.
That's right. Yes. So any dog can wear it. I am not a fan of choke chains or slip leads is what they're sometimes called.
Yeah.
Prong collars or pinch collars or mother's, what was it? Sometimes heard it referred to
mother's helper,
mother's helper, or
mother's helper,
or mother's discipline, or something. It's it's not really.
It's like biting your puppy's neck like its mother would have. No, it's not. No,
and mothers don't actually bite their puppy's necks. They pick them up by the scruff, which is different than biting your dog's neck. So not fond of those. And choke chains, I'm especially not fond of because they can cause real tracheal damage to a dog or esophageal damage and can be quite dangerous. And I really am not at all fond of electronic collars because I have no need to harm or hurt my dog or make them feel like they're being bitten in the neck or shocked or So I really don't use those and do not encourage the use of them because I think it damages your relationship with your dog. And I think it's, there are a lot of unintended consequences with the use of those. Was your dog actually learning what you think he's learning? I'm not so sure of that. So I'm not
with each of those types.
Right.
Yeah. Is your dog actually learning what you think you're teaching your dog when you're using a choke chain or a slip lead, a prong collar, or an electronic collar? All of those have some pretty serious negative repercussions for many, many dogs because they create additional stress and suppress behavior, but don't usually teach the better alternative behavior. So, right. Okay, so we want our dogs on nice, flat, buckle collars with a quick release. That's what we want.
That's right. Or a martingale. Or
whatever color you like, but that's what you're getting.
Yeah, and there are
it's
a lot of...
like Henry Ford. You can have anything you want as long as it's black. Well, we're saying you can have any kind of collar you want as long as it's a flat buckle collar with a quick release.
But you have your choice of colors. So, yes, it's the Henry Ford collar. That's what we should name our line of collars, the Henry Ford collar.
There we go, our fancy new brand of collars. That's okay, right. So now we've got our dog and we've got a collar. Fantastic, but we would love to be able to step outside the house. So we need a leash.
Yes, we do need a leash.
We need a leash. And I always tell people, a leash is a safety device, not a training tool. So it's a training tool, sort of, but mostly you should be training your dog to stay near you without putting any tension on that leash.
Correct.
So this leash is not for yanking your dog or pulling your dog or tugging your dog. The leash is just to prevent the mistakes.
Right.
My personal favorite is a 6-foot leather leash.
Mine too.
And given my preference, an old 6-foot leather leash because it's all worn in and soft and lovely. Mm-hmm. But leather leashes are more expensive.
They are.
So. And they're a little bit less common, too, when you're looking in the stores. So mm-hmm. most of my clients have a 6-foot nylon leash.
Correct. So do mine.
Which is not my favorite if you have a dog that pulls. And the reason for that is that the nylon can be really, really rough on your hands. It can just really make you feel sore. And it's if you're not going to buy a leather leash, I would prefer you bought a cotton leash. Cotton leashes are kind of difficult to find these days because they're slightly more expensive than nylon. They're not expensive, but they're more expensive than nylon. And they're not as pretty.
That's so right. They don't have like, shiny colors.
Yeah. They're like, how can I tell if it's cotton or nylon? I'm like, if you like the color, it's nylon. So if it's, you know, hot pink, it is not cotton. Army green, probably cotton.
Yeah.
So if there's any shine to it, if you're visually attracted to the leash, it's nylon. That will probably hurt your hands more. So cotton, I think, is better. So that's just your basic 6-foot leash. But we see a lot of people on flexi leads. What are your thoughts about those?
Oh, I don't like flexi leads. And in fact, I forbid them in class. And I would forbid,
them in class too. They're not safe in class.
No, they're not safe. And they're not safe for a couple of reasons. One is that cord, I've seen it rip through people's hands almost down to the tendon if you grab at that cord. So
yeah, I've had very serious burn in the curve of my fingers, the inside of my really bad from one of those leads, trying to catch a dog that was pulling away from someone.
Right. And the ones with the bands are no better. They also chafe. They just have a wider chafe across your hands.
I'm cringing just this conversation.
I know, me too. Okay.
I'm reliving that experience.
I've actually seen them cut people's hands.
Mine bled.
Yeah.
And they hurt for weeks.
Yes, they do. They do. Because it's not just a cut, it's a burn.
It's a horrible rope burn.
So right we could probably go on for a half an hour about the gruesomeness of these flexies. but the other reason why I don't like them is, well, there are two reasons why I don't like them, other than the fact that they're, you know, they mutilate your hand, like kind of like the Spanish Inquisition, is because, one, if they're dropped in class, they're really loud and they can startle other dogs.
And I think it's for the dog wearing it.
Yes.
Like, oh my gosh, something's chasing me because this plastic thing is retracting back toward their body.
Right. So they're loud. And they're very difficult to control the dog because you're sort of reeling them in like they're a tuna or something.
Yeah.
And you just don't have control. And even if you have it on a short thing, you hold that bulky handle reduces your control over the lead and you don't get a real sense. There's something about having a loop lead and holding the lead itself. You get the fluidity of movement with your dog and you get those subtle signals through the leash, which you don't get with those big blocky things. It makes it very hard to manage. So I'm beyond that, I'm not fond of them for regular walks either, because all it really does is teach your dog to pull it, 10 feet, 15 feet, however far out they go. It can be useful if you're in a situation where, you know, your dog can have some extra room but can't be completely off lead. Can be useful there, but in general, boy, I'm just not a fan of flexies at all. The one thing I would also say, too, about leashes is that I like ones that are more fluid. I don't like them real stiff, and that is a problem with new leather leashes, but a little neat's foot oil can really help to loosen up that leather leash if you get a stiff leather leash.
Yes.
So you're not a fan of flexies.
I'm not a fan of flexies, but I actually do own one.
I do, too.
And I have one that I use in one location and one location only, and it's an area where it's not really safe for my dog to be completely off-leash, but there's no need for him to be within 6 feet of me all the time either. And so he knows. He's like, that's my Lake Anna leash. Like, this is so great. That's where I'm going to be. And so he can wander farther and be farther, and it's safe for that. But we're not going for long walks on it, and we're not encountering other dogs, and we're certainly not using it on, you know, city streets or whatever. So I'm not like, thou shalt never have a flexi lead, but it shouldn't be your day-to-day go-to leash. It shouldn't be the one that you're using in the pet store. It shouldn't be the one you're using in class. And it's really not a great one for just walking around your neighborhood. We should be developing that communication of, you know, that we're walking together. I do not think that your dog needs to walk perfectly in heel position on your walk.
I agree.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying, the flexi lead lets your dog wander all over and sniff. I don't care if your dog wanders all over and sniffs. I think that's great. That's why you're out there, right? Whatever makes you happy. So I'm not a big fan of flexi leads. So on the leash issue, one of the issues, particularly with leather leashes, but for certain dogs with almost any kind of leash, is the grabbing of the leash or the chewing of the leash. So one of the first things we do is leashes are not left where dogs can get at them at home if you have a chewer. So a lot of leashes are chewed when they're not on the dog. They're just available.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
You wouldn't? I'm so glad.
No, and I wouldn't have three or four leather leashes that have been chewed in half because of that. No, that never happens in my house.
It's never happened.
Never happened. Yeah, it's amazing.
I've been fortunate that particular thing hasn't happened in my house, but I wouldn't want to go through a test of all the other things that have happened. particular one, I can say I have never had a leather leash chewed up.
Well, you are a lucky soul.
I am actually my favorite leather leash, the one I use every day, I believe is 20-some years old. I love this leash. So whatever I paid for it at the time, which was more than I wanted to, I think I've got my money's worth.
I think you have.
I have two other leather leashes in the house that have not gotten into regular circulation because they're not as good as my original leather leash. Anyway, dogs who chew on the leash. One thing I do like to do is see if we can make the leash, first off, work on attention and all those pieces. Redirecting the attention. Can your dog hold something else? All of the positive things. But is there a way to make the leash a little less appealing for the dog who's really using it as a arousal biting? A quick wipe of white vinegar sometimes on the end of the leash helps, just so that if your dog bites on the leash says, yuck. The dog goes, oh, the leash doesn't like me to bite. I personally don't care if you bite the leash, but the leash, it apparently objects. And then for the ones who are really crazy about it, sometimes a little a metal extension between the end of the leash and the dog's collar, so the piece the dog is reaching is metal versus leather. But you do want to be careful with that, just so that they're not breaking teeth. Like, if we're really looking at that level of arousal, we need to be focusing on it. But if it's just sort of, I want to hold something, I want to hold this, and you're trying to redirect that as a short-term solution, a metal extension can be a nice piece there.
That's true. The other thing is there are also leashes that are chains, that have a soft handle and a clip and are a chain, and they come in various weights, so you don't have to use like the 40-pound leash on your Chihuahua. They have various weights. But it's the same kind of thing. If it's for a really active chewer, you want to be careful that they don't break a tooth on it. But I found that to be very successful with dogs who just want to hold the leash or, you know, start to play with it. Sometimes it's not appealing to put metal in their mouth. So, and I've had some real success with that. So now we've got a collar and a leash.
Yeah. And then we walk out the door with our big dog who drags us down the street. So maybe a harness might be come in handy right here.
It might be. So there are a lot of harnesses on the market. There's no doubt about that. And there's a lot that claim to be no-pull harnesses. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. There are some that I find that people say, this is a no-pull harness. And I'm like, does it work? Well, no. Then it's not really a no-pull harness, is it?
Yeah.
One of the things that I have found for no-pull harnesses, some of the more effective ones are the ones that have the front clasp. That clasp right around the breastbone of the dog. And the reason for that is because it engages the oppositional reflex of the dog. If you pull on the leash, the oppositional reflex of the dog is to pull against that pressure. So if you hook it on the front of the dog, right on the breastbone, which is where it's located, you don't actually hook the breastbone, that would kind of like be painful. Then the oppositional reflex is if there's tension moving forward, the dog will drop back. And that's the whole idea behind them. And I have found them that they work. There's a caveat though. And that is they have to be used, at least in my experience, they have to be used in conjunction with loose lead walking training. Yes. Because the dog can learn to sort of override that oppositional reflex and pull anyway. I'm not real fond of the kind that attach mid-spine on the back of the dog. I find that actually is just sort of teaching your dog to mush. It's almost like a mushing horse.
It's why they all think they're in the Iditarod. They're like, I can go.
And I do have a mushing harness I had a mushing harness for Bingley because he would pull me on a scooter. And I got to tell you, I'd put him in that harness and it was like grease lightning. That dog, I'd put him in a standstill, tell him to go, and suddenly we're going 20 miles an hour. There's something about that form of a harness that really engages that pulling.
Yes. The oppositional reflex, I think you explained it pretty well, but I want to add one little piece to it.
Please do.
Sometimes people have trouble envisioning that. It's sort of like a theory. And I've used it in class orientations. I have said, okay, so I'm going to stand here and I want you to push me, push on my right shoulder, and I'm going to try not to move away. And so someone will come and push, and I can survive a little bit, and then I get bumped over. And I'm like, but what did I do when I was trying not to tip over? And they say, well, you were pushing back against the hand. Like, right. Okay. So now I'm going to stand here, and I'm going to hold my arm out, and I want you to pull my arm and try to pull me towards you, but I'm going to try not to. And so I'm then leaning the opposite way to try to prevent being pulled over, and eventually they can pull me a step. And I'm like, okay, so what was I doing to prevent that? And they go, oh, you were pulling the other way. Exactly. So when we put a leash on a dog's collar, and the collar rotates around to the back of his neck, and he feels some tension on the back of his neck, and it puts pressure on the front of his neck, and he wants to balance that out, what was he going to do? He's going to pull forward. So he's going to choke himself on his own collar to try to relieve the tension that's there. So by connecting the leash to the front clasp of the harness, it doesn't rotate around. It doesn't create this tension from the back.
Correct.
So that if it's pulling on the front of the dog at all, the natural response to ease it would be to actually loosen up the leash and come closer toward you.
Right.
So I don't know that verbally that came any more clear, but that when we do it in person, people can really see the oppositional reflex is something we all have. It's a totally natural response. It's mm-hmm. what keeps us balanced and keeps us moving. It helps us in so many ways. But when we're looking at harnesses, it matters very much whether the leash is connecting to the front of your dog, beneath his chin on his breastbone area, or to the back of your dog mid-spine where he's getting ready to be a sled dog.
Right, right.
Now, for little tiny fluffy dogs, I don't really care where you attach your leash. Because if your little Bichon drags you down the street and you don't care and he doesn't care, great. But one of the big advantages of harnesses is they're not putting any pressure on the trachea.
Correct.
So that's fantastic. So if your little dog is dragging you along regardless and it's not hurting them and it's not hurting you, go for it. But your big dog is going to pull you over. Mm-hmm. In a back clip harness.
Even a medium-sized dog, I mean, a 35-pound dog has the pulling capacity to pull over a full-grown woman. So yes, we're talking about not very far from a Bichon that you need to be thinking about,
right,
is this dog going to pull me over or not? So go ahead.
Harnesses have been very popular in the last 15 years.
Correct.
And one of the big reasons they've taken over the market is because most dogs will put on a harness if it's properly fitted, and admittedly it's a little tricky to fit some of them, mm-hmm, but if it's properly fitted, your dog should put on the harness and go, huh, okay, and just move on. That typically they don't have much trouble with it. And if you need help fitting a harness, ask a trainer for that. But before we had harnesses, we used head halters frequently for dogs.
Yes.
And still do for, mm-hmm, some dogs. So head halters are based on the concept of the horse's halter. So it actually goes across the dog's muzzle and the leash connects beneath their chin. And there are still head halters available and are used for many dogs. Mm-hmm. But the reason they're no longer the first choice tool, the big reason, is because you have to acclimate the dog to it. You
absolutely
have to help the dog adjust. Whereas for most body harnesses, you put it on and the dog goes, okay.
Yes. Yes. In head halters, for really serious pullers, they really do work. The whole theory behind it is that if you control the dog's head, you control the dog. I think about with when we had horses, I would not put a collar and leash on my horse. Just, mm-hmm, wouldn't feel safe doing that. But I felt like I really did have control of my horses when they had their head halters on. So I think there's something to be said for having control over the head of the horse. How about the dog? It's also an easy way with harnesses. Your dog can still focus in on distractions. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to turn them away from a distraction. If your dog is
easier with a harness than with a collar. But absolutely, not as easy with a harness as it is with a head halter.
Correct. That's a very good way of putting it. So that when your dog is looking at something, you can gently rotate his head back to you to disengage him from a distraction. And that's nice, especially for dogs who get highly aroused by distractions. It can also be very calming for some dogs. There's some acupressure points apparently behind the ears. And if the halter is fitted correctly, it can push on those acupressure points and be very calming for some,
yes,
dogs. The biggest problem with head halters, and what I find to be the most common problem in fitting them, owners make the band that goes around the head too loose and the one that goes around the snout way too tight. Mm-hmm. And that can be very, very difficult for dogs. So it does need to be correctly fitted. And once again, a trainer who uses them should be able to help you to fit it correctly. But as you mentioned, that they do require some acclimation to it. And I have a protocol that I give to my owners based on Tracy Schreier's muzzle protocol. It's the same thing, only you do it with a gentle leader. And depending on the dog, I think I broke it down into 17 steps.
17. Quick and easy. 17 easy steps to adjusting your dog to a head halter.
Right.
Totally worth doing, though.
It is. And actually, they're pretty easy. The first one is, like, basically show the dog the head halter. Let, mm-hmm, him sniff it. And as soon as he's comfortable, you can move to step number two. So the first few steps are pretty easy. But I do ask them to promise me three things. One is that they will do every step. Mm-hmm. And they do every step in order. Don't start skipping, mm-hmm, around. You're going to cause yourself some problems. And three, if you're having problems, don't move to the next step until that step is 100%. So if you're having problems with step number 8, it's not going well, back up to 6 or 7 and start over again. Now, how long does this take? Boy, that really depends on the dog. It can take anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks, and yeah, that's frustrating for owners too. But it is so well worth it, because if your dog loves and shoves his face into his gentle leader or his haltie or whatever head halter, mm-hmm, it is that you choose to use, you're going to be so much better off than trying to chase your dog around the living room to strap him, yeah, into something he hates.
Yes. Yes. It does take a little while to adjust it, but they're great tools for that. When you were mentioning the common mistakes of fitting a head halter, it occurs to me that there are common mistakes of fitting the body harness too. And the most common mistake of fitting the body harness is that they do across the front band too tight and then the around the ribs band too loose.
Yes.
So if we can adjust the around the ribs piece, I tell people to think of your dog's front clasp harness like a watch band or a bra strap, that when you move, it moves with you. That if it's moving, if you're moving and it's not moving, you're going to get chafing. So fit the band that's going around your dog's ribs first, and then deal with the strap that goes across the front of their chest. Do that last. But the most common mistakes are too big on the ribs, too tight on the chest. The most common mistakes for head halters are too tight on the nose, too big on the head.
Yes. Yes. Those are the most common mistakes. And then the other thing that I think is incredibly important to remember with both head halters and with harnesses, but especially with halters, these are not to be used with a flexi.
Right.
It's setting your dog up for some really serious neck issues. Yes. If you are jerking on that to try and get him in. So please do not use your head halter with a flexi lead. And remember, both the halter and the harness are best used in conjunction with loose lead walking training. They're training aids, not complete solutions.
Right. So now we've got our collar, which we're not hooking our leash to, and our dog is wearing either a harness or a head halter, which we've now hooked our leash to, and we've stepped out the front door, and we're hoping our dog is going to pay attention to us, but doesn't. So we need to bring treats along on the walk, and so we need to have a place to put those treats.
Absolutely.
So treat bags.
Treat bags.
You should take your treats on every single walk. It's just every single walk. Just take treats.
That's right. You may not use any of them.
Totally fine to come back with a bag full of treats if there was no reason why you needed them. But the moment that you wish you had one and you don't have one, it's bad. So treat bags come in a whole bunch of different styles. Find the one that you like. But a couple of tips that that we have, so playing around with what works for you. I'm definitely not a fan of the Ziploc baggie in your pocket. I just think that it makes it really hard to get the treat and have any sort of nice timing for being able to deliver
Correct.
It.
Correct.
So I like easy access to the treats. I love two-pocket Home Depot aprons. I mean, just your basic those. They're so easy access. Nothing spills. You can move around. They're cheap. They get disgusting. You throw it away. Big deal. You get a new one. So those are the world's easiest and cheapest treat bag. But I also like of the bags actually made to be treat bags. I like ones that snap back closed when you're not actually taking a treat out, because two reasons. When you're doing a down or something and you've tilted your body over, some treat bags will spill. And mm-hmm. so then the dog gets this giant smorgasbord of food arriving on them. And some dogs learn that if they get really excited and jump and bounce, they can hit the bottom of your treat bag. And we call it the pinata game in class. So a dog gets super excited and jumps on you and they hit the bottom of your treat bag and treats come raining out. Yay, it's a party. So having a way that the bag closes in between is a really nice thing.
That is a nice thing. One of the other things is I tell people, if I get someone who is, you know, my age, I'm like, you lived through the 80s, right? And they all look at me and I said, I bet somewhere in the back of one of your closets is a fanny pack. and then I look at my younger students and go, ask your mother. I'm sure she has one somewhere in the back of her closet. Old fanny packs are great treat things.
Yeah.
Treat dispensers. And in fact, I used one in class last night. And so I think there's a lot of them. But I tell my owners, easy access. So you can quickly get in and out. And something that you don't mind that gets a little, you know, stinky, because it's going to. So I think those are great things. Fanny packs or ones that snap closed. There are kinds that you can get that just link right onto your belt. Doggone Good has a good one that I use a lot. But I do use the... I do use the two-pocket canvas paint aprons a lot.
Yeah. We'll actually put a few links onto some of our favorite treat bags. And it's really a matter of what you like. I mean, so look and see what you think works for you. Mm-hmm. But there are a bunch of different kinds, and there are a lot of really excellent ones.
Yes.
So having your treats with you when you walk your dog is very important. And then the final piece of equipment that both you and I use, and not everyone uses, but we really both like, is a clicker.
Absolutely.
And a clicker is just a magic little piece of equipment that, here, I just have one in my pocket, magically enough, makes a noise. And the noise doesn't have – oh, dear, now I have a happy dog.
I was going to say, Zuzu might have heard that one, but no.
Doesn't have any natural meaning for the dog. It's taught to the dog, and it tells the dog, you have just earned a treat. There's a huge advantage to being able to say, this exact moment, that was what we loved. So this weekend I was working with a 9-month-old Doberman who's had no training and spent almost all of the time in the air. He would launch himself at me just over and over. The arousal on this dog was incredible. So I clicked every time he had 4 feet on the floor. So just click, throw a treat, click, throw a treat. I probably clicked at least 4 times that he had 4 feet in the air because he was launching so quickly. But for the most part, I got, 150 clicks for 4 feet on the floor and 4 accidental clicks. I call them stolen clicks. Ah, you stole that one from me too fast. Where I got the wrong thing. By the end of that appointment, he was amazing. He was keeping his feet on the floor because I was able to pinpoint specific moments. And if I had just been trying to give him a treat for those moments without having a way of telling him that moment, it would have taken longer. It would have been a little bit harder for the dog to completely understand.
I agree. And clickers really, I tell my students, is that in theory, technically, you don't, in positive reinforcement training, you don't have to have a clicker. What you have to do is clearly mark the desired behavior.
Right.
Okay. But if you do add a clicker, you're going to turbocharge your training because you're going to have a very precise way to tell your dog. And I said, it's not a remote. You can't show it at your dog and click and turn them on and off. It's really a communicator. It's a way of saying, that's it. That's exactly what I want. Go figure. Not every one of my students wakes up in the morning and the first thing they do is strap their clicker on. Your students, I'm sure they do, but
I'm sure my students all do, but I don't actually. I thought it was kind of amazing that I had one in my pocket just now, but that's actually a coincidence because I came from an appointment this morning. So,
all right then.
By ordinary life, I don't always have a clicker in my pocket,
but I do always have my voice.
So
one of the things that I try to do is come up with a very distinct way of a reward, what's called a reward marker for my dog. So, and what I'll do is if I'm clicking, I'll say the reward marker at the same time. So these begin to get associated with one another. And what I say for my dogs, because this is what rolls off the tongue for me, is yes. And I say it in a very distinct way, because if I look at people and go, yes, they kind of think I'm creepy, but my dogs don't. So think of a word that you can use in place of a clicker that's going to mean the same thing if you don't have a clicker, something that's very clear and very distinctly marks that particular behavior. If you really want to do it well, a clicker is really the way to go. But some dogs are afraid of clickers, so especially the box clicker can be very loud. So there's eye clicks and there's pens click. But if your dog is afraid of the sound of a clicker, then you need a very distinctive word. Maybe it's bingo. Maybe it's
It's just a noise. And I currently have a dog like in my lap because I just did that one click. So now I'm going to make my backup noise and he's going to be delighted. But I use a tongue click because I never accidentally in the middle of a sentence go.
Yes.
So there's an advantage to that. There's also no emotion. So you just said you use the word yes, and you do it in a very distinct way. And while you were talking, I said yes, but I wasn't trying to do your click. I was just agreeing. I was like, yes, that's very good. So the thing I do tell people is to be very aware that if you have a magic word, how often do you use it in regular conversation?
Correct.
And watch to make sure that you deliver it as close to the same every time, because there is a big difference between – yes. And yes. And
yes.
I find for me, when I am training a dog and the dog just like gets it, I put a lot of emotion into my words. I'm
true.
Like, yes, that's not the same click. But for
that's
me,
right.
I couldn't help it. But I cannot do a super excited. It doesn't. There's no particular wow factor there.
Well, I'm sure that for those who incorporate clicks into their actual language, there's probably some sort of tonal clicking that goes on that we are just not aware of because we don't have clicks as part of our natural language.
Indeed. I think it's just a matter of finding what works for you because most people actually use a word, and for most people it works well. For me, a word hasn't worked as well because I am very aware of the differences in it. So it's just worth noting that you should have a backup click if you're using a clicker. What's your, oh my goodness, my clicker's not on me. What am I going to do? I want to catch that behavior.
Right.
Decide what it is. Make it consistent. Use it. That's the key. Use it. So I always tell people to think of your clicker like a camera, like we're taking pictures of your dog doing good things. And the more we can do it, the more we're like, look, all of these amazing things you do. The dog will start offering all those things. They're like, oh, you like when I lay over here. Oh, you like when I come and sit with my head on your lap. Oh, you like this. You like that. You like the other thing. It tells the dog all of the yeses in the world. And the more we can say yes to dogs and to children, the more good behavior we get out of them.
Absolutely. Well, the other thing I always tell people is whatever your marker word is, don't make it okay.
Right.
Because you say the word okay all the time. We all do. So be very careful of the word that you choose, but a lot of, okay, I'll use it. No, don't use okay, because...
Yes, and don't use it as your release for stay either, which reminds me of a story from years and years and years ago. I was teaching a class, basic obedience in an outdoor area, and I had a woman who was just taking a brush-up refresher with her very, very well-trained Doberman. I mean, such a good dog that they were really just doing it just to give the dog an outlet. And she needed to go to the bathroom one day, and she was like, could you please hold on to Tara while I run into the facility? Like, fantastic. So I'm teaching class, but this is like the world's best dog, so no problem. So I put Tara in a sit-stay beside me, and I turned to the class and went, okay, so now we're going to do, and she pops up. And I'm like, oh, no, no, Tara, sit, stay. And then, okay, so now we're going to. It took me three times before I realized that I had just released the dog. Each time I put her in a stay, she stayed, I released her, and then I was confused why she got up. And it was me, because her word was okay. I felt really bad. I was like, I'm thinking, why are you not staying? You're so amazing at stay. She's like, why are you keep releasing me when you
yes, that's like, right.
We're ready to do the next thing now. So being really conscious of what words creep up in your vocabulary, and I pick up other people's vocabulary. Like, I had a client who used the word fantabulous as her backup click. She was like, I'm just going to say fantabulous. And I heard myself say to a totally different client one day, oh, my goodness, that's fantabulous. Not really a word I use that much. So yes. If your magic click word is something, you may find yourself accidentally saying it in other situations. You're still paying that dog.
Yes. Yes.
If you say fantabulous and that means click, you're paying.
That's right. That's right. So, all right. Well, I think, okay, so summary, we have a collar, a flat buckle, quick release, or martingale style collar, a 4 to 6 foot, probably 6 foot leash of some kind, attached to either a body harness or a head halter.
You have a collar if your dog does no pulling.
That's right. Or
if you're training the behaviors.
That's right.
Head halter or harness.
A treat bag filled with lots of yummy things so that you can distract your dog if you need to. And a way to mark his good behavior with a click or a verbal click. I love your verbal click. Or some sort of word. And these are really the basic equipment things that you need to really set you and your dog up for success.
Mm-hmm.
I think that does it for today. And we will see you next week, Colleen.
Enjoy your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.